Fangoria is back. The magazine that set the standard is back as a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition, and they're just about to release their amazing second edition. Set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, fiction, and exclusive artwork. Specific contents are being kept under wraps for now because Fangoria wants you to experience true analog nostalgia when you open that black poly bag and see what's inside for the very first time. But it's not just the magazine anymore. Fangoria is also bringing you novels under its Fangoria Presents label, and Fango is getting into the movie biz. Be sure to check out their latest release, Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich. Head to Fangoria.com and subscribe to Fangoria. A subscription is $60 and will save you about $20 off the cover price. That's Fangoria.com. Subscribe now. Today's episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Diabolik DVD, featuring demented discs from all over the world. Check them out online at www.diabolikdvd.com. They're the number one source for horror, cult, and strange films from around the world. The company is movie buff owned and operated. If you're looking for rare, unique, and strange films, then you need to head over to Diabolik DVD. They're constantly updating their inventory and have plenty of movies that you won't find anywhere else. They've recently revamped their website, and ordering has never been easier. They now have some of their newest releases include a 4K disc of The Deer Hunter, total masterpiece, new Blu-ray Vinegar Syndrome release of Mausoleum, utterly bonkers, Let the Corpses Tan from Kino, which is incredible, the new Arrow Blu-ray edition of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and they also have Blu-rays of the RLJ film, All the Creatures Were Stirring, on pre-order. So if you haven't picked up the DVD, save it for the Blu-ray. So for all your horror and occult cinema needs, head on over to www.diabolikdvd.com or find them on Facebook. Also sponsoring our special end-of-the-year episode, we have Shout Factory and Scream Factory. They didn't need no introduction to you guys. Over 425 horror, sci-fi, and cult classic Blu-ray releases over the years. Some of the biggest ones, The Thing, Carrie, Candyman, The Return of the Living Dead, The Fog. But this month, in December, the key release, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, It's Garbage Day. Don't miss it. You also have Carpenter's Starman. From Hammer Films, we have Dracula, Prince of Darkness. Coming up in the new year, we got Collector's Edition of Valentine, Cobra, because he's the disease and you're the cure, 10 to Midnight and The Craft. Order now at shoutfactory.com and other fine online retailers. And finally, Severin Films, purveyors of the finest quality horror, cult, and exploitation films on special edition Blu-ray. Visit www.severin-films.com and follow Severin Films on Facebook. This year, Severin released red carpet special editions of fan favorites such as Threads, The Changeling, one of the best releases of the year, Eaten Alive, Emmanuel, and The Last Cannibals, Horror Party Beach, Anthropophagus, Absurd, The Sadist of Notre Dame, and the sold-out limited box sets, The Amicus Collection and The Blood Island Collection. Severin has almost doubled the disc lineup for 2019 with films from Eurocult Fulci Masters, Joe D'Amato, Umberto Lenzi, Bruno Mattei, Franco, and Andy Milligan, Al Adamson, and Hemisphere Horror box sets. Keep an eye on Severin Films at our website and on Facebook. They're killing it.
Okay, and welcome back. It's now officially episode 127, part two of our top 10.
I
needed
that break. I don't know
about you.
You
needed it, right? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah.
Seven days for me, motherfuckers.
Yeah. But we've got whiskey here. I'm one of your hosts, Rob G. I'm with Elric Kane. Salut.
Salut.
I'm with Ryan Turek.
Hello.
I'm with Rebecca McKendry.
What's up? I got peppermint tea, bitches.
Whiskey, peppermint tea. Nice. Getting wild. Cookies still left over from last week.
Yeah, are they still good? What's up with
that? I think they're still okay.
Ernie's here. Ernie's recording us. Again, he's having whiskey, too.
He's
earned it after sitting and listening to our conversations for all
for 7 days.
And this is it. This is it for 2018, guys. We're going to take a little breather, catch up on some reading and some movies and some family time, and then We're going to come back in 2019 pretty strong. We've already got a great guest lineup for January. We're already creeping into booking guests for February. Yeah. One thing that you're going to see is we're going to dedicate one episode to like a cool topic as opposed to no, you know, just no guest at all.
Yep.
But we're going to, you know, tackle something fun and kind of get into that. So, yeah, we're very, very excited for 2019 and what it brings.
And while we're down for a couple weeks, I recommend going back and checking out some of the other shows on the Blumhouse Network. Like Queer Wolves is just absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. If you've got a little bit of time or you're driving this holiday, Queer Wolves Postmortem with Mick Garris. And then we've also
got great interviews with Mick. He just did Don Mancini, which was
Oh, the Don episode's great.
Yeah, I heard that one. Yeah.
His thoughts on the Child's Play remake. He doesn't hold back, baby.
And then also I'll recommend Fear Initiative, which is our horror kind of D&D role-playing podcast as well. So while you're missing us for a couple of weeks during your holiday break, please check out some of our other shows on the network.
Yeah.
100%. And to remind you, so we managed to go through 10 to 6. This is going to be our top 5. We're not only doing our top 10 of the year, we're also doing our top 10 favorite things of the year.
Simultaneously. I still don't know how this is working, but we're doing it. So I'm engaged.
So
the last episode did really well. So
that's
so
pretty good.
Like, you know,
is that what you predicted?
The ratings were great. It sounded good.
We listened to it. People responded. We responded to them, and now we're recording.
Did we change our 5 now? Because of it? No, of course not. So yeah, this is where it all comes down to the top 5. We're going to start with my number 5 film, and then we'll go left to right. For me, it is You Might Be the Killer.
Nice.
And this is, again, another Shudder exclusive. Again, Shudder's doing incredible. I mean, I think this has been their best year yet in terms of programming and original content that you can't find anywhere else. The thing about this movie, I love horror comedy. It's one of my favorite things of all time. This movie, it was as if it was written and made for me. Because as the title implies, as soon as it opens, what's the actor's name again? Fran Kranz, who's in The Cabin in the Woods, and great in that. He's the stoner character.
Yeah, he's great in that.
He wakes up at camp, covered in blood, freaking out, convinced the killer is after him, hides out in the cabin. This is the opening scene. Calls his best friend, Allison Hannigan, who's like running like a geek shop with comic books and collectibles and stuff. Wow. She answers the phone. He's like, oh my God, I'm at camp. This is what's happening. Everybody's dead, blah, blah, blah. And basically, as the title implies, she's like, wait, are you covered in blood? He's like, yes. And she's like, okay, you might be the killer. And so they have to talk this out and try. He has to try to remember what happened. And just from that premise, it's fun to hear like, how are you going to sustain this?
Yeah.
And they do it in such a fun, unique way where they keep adding twists and turns and things that we love about the genre. And I just absolutely love this movie. And it kept floating in my top 5, but I locked it at number 5. You Might Be the Killer. Watch it on Shudder ASAP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
All right, Elric, number 5.
Number 5 is also one of my favorite episodes we did. I have about 2 that I really loved this year, but one of them was with Panos Cosmatos. And I loved it because he is one of us. Like, I think they're my favorite episodes, not just the celebrity episodes. It's actually the people who are just literally like us. They are complete cinephiles with reference points all over the map. And I love talking to people about movies. So Mandy could might even be higher on my favorite movies of the year list, but as a horror film, I'm ranking it as number 5. It was just complete aesthetic fun. It's definitely more of a midnight movie and more of a cult movie than I'd say pure horror, but it is just, I just had an absolute blast with it. And Cheddar Goblins, you know, definitely one of my favorite things of the year. Cheddar Goblins special. Yep. And I just loved, you know, I mean, when I think about this movie, the first thing I think of is a long take of Nicolas Cage drinking from a bottle, dancing in his underwear. And it's like, and even that's just such a small part of the film, but that was actually an emotional scene. And it's very hard to pull off, like, caring about somebody as they grieve and saying that should be utterly ridiculous. And I think it's a testament to what a good actor he is. But it's also just a really interesting film. And it's one of the first films I've seen shot digitally that I'm truly shocked when I found that out. Like, I was like, oh, I saw the 16mm grain. I know it's 16. It's like, no, we added that. And that was fascinating, too. But it just also reminds me of Larry Cohen movies. It just reminds me of a lot of things I love. And I think the performance of the actress, whose name just skipped my mind, who plays Mandy, is utterly haunting. And she's kind of like the secret MVP of the movie. Because both the two lead actors, obviously, they get to really be showy and are incredible. She has just got this haunting look. And it feels like she is predetermined to to bad things to happen. Now, you know, like when you first see her, it feels there's something in her face that already tells you of some sort of victimhood. She's also great in the Black Mirror episode of Crocodile. I mean, she's just an unbelievable actress. But this film I just really enjoy, and it's fun, and
well,
can't wait to see it again.
Mandy is also my number five. Hey. So I'll go ahead and jump in.
And I think I sat next to you, both of you.
You did. You were like, yeah, in between us. And when Cage came down wearing that beautiful gold lamé suit, it was like Eddie Murphy's Raw, except gold lamé.
That actually definitely helped seeing him. But also, let's talk about, let's connect it also to favorite things of the year. And this isn't one, but it's just the fact that a movie played like this, like in a festival, and then was meant to have a pretty smallish, like theatrical and VOD, and this is the only film of the year that people demanded and pulled. This is the ultimate definition of a cult movie. People pulled it and said, "Put this in a theater, and we will come." Yeah. And I think that's so freaking cool.
Yeah,
you know?
It was very cool. No, this one for me hit kind of like a checklist of things that I would love to see discussed in a film, all in one manner, where it was hippie culture versus heavy metal culture, and sword and sandal references thrown in, and biker culture, and somehow this acid culture all folds
Cenobites,
into
weird
it.
Cenobites,
weird Cenobites, yeah.
Bikers.
And it was just kind of like a whole bunch of shit that I'm really fascinated by. Let's all blend it into a movie, but I'll make them really subtle. Yeah. And then some weird bee that apparently makes you trip really crazy. Yeah, and there's a tiger. So
and channeling a Richard Lynch bad guy. I mean, how cool is that? It literally feels like the guy from
God Dreams.
God Told Me To.
Oh,
He just feels like an extension of that character, and that was super fun to me. But yeah, you're right. It's one of those things that, like his previous film, that could just totally fall apart. The references, the soundtracks, but somehow it holds together and creates something you just haven't really quite seen before.
No, and it was very inspiring because it is so individualized and so stylish and so weird and just nothing that you've ever seen before. But the budget that he had to play around with on that. I was talking with him after the show, and he was telling me about how specific he was about the ending scene and the way that the church burnt down. And I was like, wait, you got to burn an actual church? And he was like, oh yeah, we burnt that. And I was like, you built it just to burn? And he was like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh, it's just
that's cool.
Yeah, like being able to have that much control over a film it's inspiring.
Yeah. It's fun.
Cool. Ryan, what's your number five?
Number five is Terrified.
Terrified
is definitely something that just kind of hit me on the right level in terms of being, yes, it does feel like a bunch of vignettes kind of strung together, but I really just kind of dived into the mystery of it all. Once, you know, it's weird. I kind of gravitate to these movies that begin with people being interrogated. You know, you look at Big Trouble in Little China. And it's literally, you know, it's what's-his-face sitting there. And he's like, you leave Jack Burton alone. And he's like, let me tell you what happened. And it's like, cool. So they kind of do the similar thing here. And when you think it's okay, humdrum haunted house movie, got it. The great thing about Terrified is it reaches beyond the home and becomes a neighborhood. It's a haunted, like, subdivision. It's a haunted, you know, area. And that's what I really dug about it. And again, we talk about, in the last episode, you know, moments and, you know, the dead boy sitting at the table, the floating girlfriend in the shower tub. I mean, like, the director clearly has a grasp on things that are terrifying. And there is a moment in the third act of this film that I jumped off the couch.
I screamed out loud.
I did too. I was just like, holy shit! Yeah. It's really cool. And it kind of gave me
it's a good sign that I don't know which one you're talking about, because there's like four or five.
Yeah, you do.
I was like, I don't know which one it is.
You described it as used.
No. Oh, okay.
Yes,
but there is a lot of them. There's a lot of cool moments like that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, listen, where it lacked in kind of narrative cohesion, it made up for in delivering the heebie-jeebies and the scares. And I kind of felt that way the first time I ever saw Ju-on. You know, Ju-on was a film that I had kind of went in expecting a Ring-esque kind of long-haired ghost movie, and it gave you a series of, you know, vignettes that terrified the shit out of you. So, Terrified was pretty cool.
Had you heard of that before it came out?
I did. It was one of those things that I heard about in whispers on the distribution side, and it was like, you need to see Terrified. And I was like, fuck, what did I miss? And it debuted, I forgot what festival, that I would never have had a chance to get to, and I just like sought it out. And
so the golden question, to American remake or not to American remake? What do you think?
Well, God, I have
Del Toro's already supposedly doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Producing. Okay, see him I might try. impressed. I'm, that film is on my list. It's a bit further down. We'll get to it in a bit. Yeah. But yeah, that's one. I don't want more answers. I'm scared that if somebody American comes in, that it's going to be, or especially like a big studio, it's going to be, we got to make this more vanilla and let's explain everything.
I feel like you could do almost everything the same, but just have one central character to follow and not explain more, but just follow one person through it a little clearer. Because I'd be into that. I mean, the scares are so good. And you could span, because it's very short, right? It's like 75, 80 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
So you could probably give it another 10 and get a little bit more in there. But again, I'm not a big fan when they do it too quickly. Like, Let the Right One In. Let Me In was obviously too quick, even though it's a really good movie. It's like when it's under a year, you just haven't got time to take it in as its own movie.
I was that way with We Are What We Are. And I actually like the American version. It was just too quick for
me. Yeah, even when they change it, but you just need a little more time between them. But so give it 2 years, Ryan, and bring us back Terrifier.
All right, number five favorite things of 2018. This is kind of broad, but basically, I was in love with horror fiction, horror books, and Audible. This is, you know, I'm a slow reader, but I love discovering Audible. There was a lot of interesting things out there today. Paul Tremblay's The Cabin at the End of the World was one of my favorite books. I thought Stephen King's The Outsider.
I listened to that one. Who was reading that?
It's not a name. It was a female narrator who I listened to with that one. The Outsider by Stephen King, I thought was kind of like top form King again. Like, it's been a long time since I heard that. I haven't listened yet, but I downloaded his Elevation, the most recent thing he did. I mean, we have Michael C. Hall doing Pet Sematary, which I downloaded but haven't listened to yet. Grady Hendrix, We Sold Our Soul, and then things like Don Coscarelli's biography, True Indie, and Michael Gingold's excellent book, Ad Nauseam.
Read that?
No. But no. It's not all. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay, gotcha.
I liked horror fiction, horror books, and Audible. Three separate things.
Okay, I was going to say that.
I didn't listen to all those things.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
just
sorry.
I need to start listening to Audible. I mean, as much shit as I gave Ryan about it on the last episode.
Well, you know what it is. Here in Los Angeles, because we have a lot of traffic. I like music, but I get kind of a little bored of music in the car. I need to listen to conversations. And that's why podcasts, I think, is such a big deal. And there were a lot of podcasts I like, but there's something exciting about going to and from work and picking up a book. You're like literally listening to a story on the way there, on the way back, all throughout the week. And yeah, it's just exciting to hear a book that way.
See, that's my entire motivation for taking the subway, is that I get really frustrated in cars. Like, I hate traffic. Like, I don't get anxiety, but I get anxiety sitting in traffic. So I take the subway because I can read the entire way there and back. But if I had Audible, I'm considering it. Man, why aren't they advertising on our fucking podcast, guys? Audible, get with it, man.
Seriously, right? How long would it take to listen to, say, Stephen King's The Outsider if you're listening on Audible? Is that like a 50-hour type thing?
I'll tell you, because I listened to that one.
And I'm curious to do that one.
Well, here's the thing.
Will Patton read it,
and it was great.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, the thing about that, and here's the thing, much like podcasts, you can kind of speed it up or do whatever. I actually listen a tiny bit faster because it's still audible to me. I can make it out. Let's see. Outsider was... No, I can't tell.
Which of our friends listens to our show at double speed? Is it Spooky?
Spooky
does that.
But
okay.
They can't hear me. That's what he says.
But do not watch Spooky's movie, Sleigh Bells, in double speed.
No.
I will be doing that.
No.
No.
Yes, I will. No, because Spooky made it in Spooky Vision, so it's really fast-paced.
It's the most Spooky ever seen. It is like the most Spooky Dan thing ever.
Anyway, that was my number five favorite thing of the year. What's yours, Elric?
I'm going to physical media. Two DVD Blu-ray releases that I never thought I would see on Blu-ray, and that's why I put them on this list. One is Next of Kin from Australia that I'm a huge fan of. I got to lend you that, or are you?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I'll lend you the Blu-ray because you have a DVD, but you should watch the Blu-ray. And then The Changeling. You know, these are two movies that I just think are The Changeling's, you know, a major horror film in my opinion. And Next of Kin, I think, is a deeply underrated one, or just underseen. So I think these two have very similar vibes, you know, spooky, big house type movies. But I just love both of them, and I'm really glad that they have, you know, real releases. And that's a good way to keep these movies important in the world. There's still a few I'd like to add on to that. But
yes.
Big fan.
My number five is The Outsider, Stephen King. You know, we were talking about books. This was the book of the summer for me.
Yeah.
It was great to see Stephen King get back into his horror roots. well, his horror roots.
He's been so far from that for a really long time. Well, it's great that he dropped the children's lit.
Well, Becca, I mean, like, let's look at his past stuff where he was doing like,
I mean, like
Joyland.
Like, no,
he joined Joyland. Like, he did a little bit of noir. He was doing not pure horror
but
stuff.
But they all have their toes in horror.
Sure. There was like maybe horror adjacent. But this, to me, when it was advertised and when it was put out, it was like, this is horror. This is the next big horror Stephen King book. And that's what, I mean, like, this is the first Stephen King book I've read since Under the Dome, which felt like Event King.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And so, I mean, I got read Sleeping Beauties that he wrote with Owen, which was okay, you know, but this was pure King doing something that was outside the realm of the Mr. Mercedes trilogy, which wasn't really horror, but it had its, but the great thing is it delivered a character from that series and reintroduced her here. And I thought she was absolutely brilliant. I'm blanking on her name, but I want to see more books with this character in it.
Yeah.
With her in it. And, The Outsider is just, you know, it kind of begins as an essay about our society of quickly jumping to persecute people.
Yeah.
and basically becoming the universal monster angry villagers that we see on social media, where it's like, take up torch and pitchfork and immediately persecute this person. And in this case, everybody's fucking wrong.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's very timely in that sense.
Very timely, and it, you know, and King is obviously very political and very vocal on Twitter about this kind of stuff.
I love his Twitter.
Oh, so do I.
It's like,
I
mean, following like, Jason Blum, where I'm just like, yes, I know. Spar.
But Outsider is a remarkably well written, really good book.
And they just announced the HBO series with what's his name?
Jason Bateman's directing. Yeah, like the first two
Jason
episodes, man.
And starring, wow. Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn's in it. Holy shit. I got super stoked about it. Initially, I wasn't so stoked that they were doing a series, and I was like, okay.
It's pretty quick.
But Bateman
and
Mendelsohn, oh my God, I can't wait. But anyways, it was a book that came out during the summer, and when they talk about cool, hot summer reads, The Outsider was number one on my list, and I still think about it. I think it's a really, and I got really sad at the end too. There was like some, not sad in the really depressing way, but kind of like in this kind of sad happiness where he found a really nice way of tying things up, which, you know, historically he's not so good at, but this is a really great novel, so. Yeah.
And just to answer your question from before, Elric, this is an 18-hour audible listen, but I think I did it in something like 12 because of the speed.
Well, for me, that's three commutes to work, so that's not bad.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I'm good.
That is fucking insane.
I'm back and I'm done. 18 hours, boom, done. Boom, boom.
God.
Something like that. No, it's a few more than that. But still, now, should I listen or should I read?
I don't know. I mean, Ryan read it. I listened to it, and I was enthralled the whole time.
I've never listened to a book.
I haven't either.
When you start reading it, you're like sucked in immediately. Okay. Yeah. It's a quick one.
Listening feels like a true crime podcast.
I need a third. We're going to do a poll with our listeners, and whichever is decided is how I will do that book.
Great.
Yeah.
I have yet to. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I haven't listened to.
I'm intrigued because I've never listened to a book because I was always like, well, what am I going to do with my eyes while I'm doing that, stare at the people on the subway, and that's not pleasant. But I'm intrigued.
But while you drive, you drive still.
No, I only drive to USC like maybe once a month. If I'm running late, I'll drive.
You could get this book done in about 3 years of driving once a week to USC. You're good. Yeah. Why not do it?
All right. Becca's number five favorite thing.
Yes, mine is graphic novel discoveries. And some of these were ones that were, and I will also use the word comic book because somebody gave me crap online for saying graphic novel versus comic book. I honestly do not know where you would qualify the difference, and I read these things like feverishly.
Wait, does it matter if you come out as a comic?
A graphic novel is a collection of comic books.
So that's where I usually read
sometimes
them.
Just made directly for a graphic novel ever?
No, usually they'll come out in single issues, and then after a couple of months or sometime a year, they'll get smushed together into a volume of usually like the first four or five. And honestly, I 90% of the time will wait until the volume comes out so I can read them all back to back. I did not do that this year with Bone Parish. I've been reading that one issue to issue, which is just really amazing. But Harrow County, I discovered this year, it's still going. Like, they have a new volume coming out in early 2019, which is still still by far one of my best discoveries, graphic novel wise, and something that I'm glad a lot of our listeners kind of followed along with me on and have really gotten engaged in it. It's terrifying as shit. The environment is phenomenal. Rat Queens, which is not horror. It's more kind of sword and sandal, but really fun.
Can you save that for your sword and sandal podcast? Mm-hmm.
No, shut up, because it does have some horror tones. And it's
there's got to be one, right?
Somebody is going to launch at you and be like, no, seriously, shut the fuck up. Rat Queens is brilliant, because it is fucking brilliant. And that one's still going on. They just released the fifth volume this year. But yeah, and then some of the ones that I'm just still discovering, like somebody tweeted Wake at me, which is a French kind of Event Horizon underwater.
Mm. Oh, God, that which, sounds like
I know, right? I'm like, how did I not know this existed? But like Plastic was one that I discovered.
I read that
year.
One. Yeah, you passed that one. That's cool.
Crab or Queen Crab, and there were just so many this year that I was. I Hate Fairyland was another one. Just ones that I'm like, how did I not know this existed? And I'm still discovering more constantly. So, and a lot of them. When we were at Texas Frightmare, one of our listeners brought me a list of like 25 graphic novels, and I wrote them all down and purchased them all when I got back. Like I bought them all used, so it wasn't like absorbent. And yeah, and I've just been burning through them. So, and I still have a couple. Fatale was one that I'm in the middle of now, which is really Lovecraftian, noirish, that I'm absolutely loving. But it's like a thick tome, so it's taken a while to get through that one, but it's really good as well.
Plus, you can listen to any of those on Audible.
I don't know how that works.
You
so.
Silly goose here.
That's true. Yeah.
All right. So number four movie, we talked about it a little bit last episode. For me, is Anna and the Apocalypse, which also, like Elric said, this could easily have been my number one.
I thought it was going to be actually your number one.
And it was in my one of my early lists. It was the number one movie. I'll explain why my number one is what it is when we get there. This is just pure fun. I mean, I don't even want to compare it to Shaun of the Dead. The only real similarity would be zombies
and Britishness.
But again, it's like I'm kind of tired of zombies. Musicals are one way or the other. I had a low bar for it. I went to see it at Fright Fest theatrically because my girlfriend really, really wanted to see it. And I was just, it's just utterly charming and crowd pleasing, and the characters are great. The songs were great. I mean, that's a big one. Like, I did go buy the soundtrack after because the songs are that good. And it's just a good, like, a good Christmas album. So, I really love this movie. And there's a little bit of tragedy behind it because it was actually originally conceived by a guy named Ryan McHenry. It was a short film that he wrote and directed called Zombie Musical back in 2011. He had developed this film. He unfortunately passed away. Mm. And so the film
I did notice it was dedicated.
Yeah, it was dedicated to him because the producers and people involved still pursued and pushed it, you know, pushed it into a reality. And it's really a great film. And again, I think it's really hard to market a movie like this. Mm-hmm. I saw the trailer after Fright Fest. I don't like the trailer at all. Mm. I don't think it reps the movie well. Even some of the posters and stuff, like, yeah, it looks cool and all, but it's really just best seen without any preconceived notion. Just go in and you'll have a great time.
Yeah, this one, it worries me how it's going to be received here in the States because, and it's on my list just much further down, it really is like an episode of Glee with zombies. And I know that you guys probably never watched Glee, but it's that same level of high school drama. We're going to stop and sing about it. And I mean, Glee did have those kind of darker episodes. But if you were to tell a normal horror fan it's Glee with zombies, they would immediately be like, well, fuck no. Mm. And it's so smart. And yeah, so I'm really hoping that people give it a chance here.
I generally don't like musicals, so I just...
This one didn't work for you?
I hate joy.
What the fuck is wrong with you, Terry?
No, I like Anna and the Apocalypse. It does have some really catchy songs in it. It's really well done.
There's one song that like I like seeing a second time. It makes me both like happy and completely sad. And I just think it's beautiful. It's the Hollywood ending.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really brilliant. And I think it's really brilliant for a teenage outlook on the world, you know, as they're getting ready to leave high school and they're just talking about that there aren't any Hollywood endings. And
well, and then the irony of it being in a movie with a lot of pretty people that look like,
No, I really, that's great. I think, weirdly, this will sound weird, it's light and poppy, but I think it's also a little deeper than it's going to get credit for, especially because it looks at the slightly sadder and more pessimistic outlook on relationships, friends, what will happen to you after you leave school.
Sure.
It's almost using the zombies as a way to go, let's just cut to the chase of what's going to happen to all of you anyway. anyway. You will be eaten up by life. Yes. These relationships won't last. And it's, I don't know, seeing it the second time really brought some of that home. And I am totally not the, like, people listening to this know I am not the target for this movie, and I love this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think some of you will be surprised.
Yeah. All right, that's my number four. Elric, what's yours?
Good choice. Okay. My number four is Annihilation. That Becca was just talking about. Like I said, it was last week, a long time ago. it was actually higher on my list, and then it was off completely until I realized, yes, it's like putting Event Horizon on. I think this film's captivating. I think I will watch it a few more times to try to get more clues. There was, I don't think it's too big a spoiler. There's a moment in this film that when I was watching the movie, there's a character who has a really bad accent, a southern accent in the film. And as I'm watching it, I was like, oh, fuck, what? They just screwed the pooch. This movie was going so well. And then they just, that was just the worst performance. And then it was like an hour later in the movie where I'm like, oh, I think that was purposeful. And I think that guy was meant to have that bad accent. And it just shows the layers that this movie has. And it definitely is purposeful. It's definitely a twist upon a twist as you start to realize you're in something that's very layered, not just a straightforward kind of journey that they're taking. And it was like almost the next day. I definitely liked it while I was watching it, but it was like the next day I was like, oh, yeah, there's some weird, okay. I still don't know how all the pieces fit together, but I really like it. And I think it's aesthetically very pleasing, and I think it's the birth of a major, I mean, he's already been a big voice. Actually, if you want a real recommendation, pure cinema style, watch Sunshine. That is a movie that is so underrated, especially the first half. Alex Garland wrote it. Mm-hmm. Danny Boyle directed it. They obviously worked together a lot, but the first half of that is as good as both Ex Machina and Annihilation, and then it slips a little bit into a serial killer on a spaceship thing, but the first half is like this crazy existential, like, what if we could see the sun? Cliff Curtis has a scene where a doctor who wants to see the sun. It's like Event Horizon, and it's fucking epic the way it's filmed.
Amen to that, man. I saw Sunshine on the big screen when it came out of the festival, and oh my god, I mean, and a great performance from Chris Evans.
Yeah, everyone in that film.
If you want to, I mean, like, granted, Chris Evans is now Captain America to everybody, but and back in the day, he was from like Not Another Teen Movie or whatever. Yeah. But if you want to see a really, nuanced performance from him, there's some sacrificing that he has to make in the film, and you just feel for this guy. You feel really bad that he's like sucking it up and ready to go in and do what he needs to do, and you're like, oh my god, man, I didn't expect you to be the one guy that I really love in this movie. But Sunshine, I need to reassess. I mean, not reassess. I need to revisit, because it's one of those movies paired with the score and the vision.
It should have a bigger presence. I think it's,
I don't know why nobody embraces that.
Yeah, the script changes quite dramatically in the last act, but I think going back to it now, I'm going to like that about it.
Yeah.
First time I was like, oh, whoa, where did this go? But it really fits into that filmography, and I think people will dig it.
Yeah.
Cool. Ryan, number four?
My number four is A Quiet Place.
Oh, cool.
I think that in terms of just pure popcorn, scary movie spectacle, you know, what the trailer delivered was an intense ride that, you know, that kind of plays on your senses. And I think that Krasinski, who directed the film, did a really, you know, as somebody who has never directed a horror film before in his life, he did a fantastic job of dialing into family dynamics, family emotions, and then kind of getting a sense of the world and having that prey on this family in a really, really great way. There's some really intense scenes in the movie that work so well. Now, granted, the kind of water cooler logic, what you're thinking about the next day, doesn't really hold up. You know, it's like, dude, no, don't have sex. Like, don't, you make too much noise. Don't do that. You know, it's like there's a lot of questions that come about in terms of the rules, but the monsters work. Emily Blunt on the staircase works. Yeah. Emily Blunt in the tub works. The kind of the scene where she's putting the baby in his basket and covering him up and her going to sleep, you're immediately going, oh my god, please don't fall asleep, stay awake, something bad's gonna happen. It's just all plays on so many great emotions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the deaf little girl who's at odds with her father because of, you know, something that had happened at the very beginning of the movie. I mean, like, fuck, man. I challenge you to not get teared up when Krasinski makes a certain sacrifice in the film.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's for his daughter, you know, and she's seeing something play out. It's just like, fuck. You know, you're a cold-hearted bastard if it doesn't work for you. But and then at the end, the ending is just so memorable and fun. So I, you know, A Quiet Place, you know, in terms of being at times a Twilight Zone episode, an Outer Limits episode, a cool creature feature, a great family drama, I think it all just works really well. So, I mean, it's about as mainstream a horror movie as you can get, and I think that it played great. So, and it did obviously well.
Yeah.
My number four is Cam.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I like Cam.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? I will say this, Becca, because, you know, yes, it is a Blumhouse movie, but I was so far away from Cam that I didn't read the script. I didn't know anything about it. The first time I saw Cam was when it hit Netflix.
Yeah.
So you got to see it objectively.
So I got to see it. Yeah, exactly. And I thought Cam worked. I mean, like, every time I see the director, Daniel, I'm like, can't wait to see your movie. And he's like, when? When are you going to finally see this? And I finally saw it, and I think it's great.
No, that one, I knew very little about it, except it was about a sex worker, which is literally like what's in the log line on Netflix. And just thought it was, I was really captivated by it. Like, I remember this one. It was like an edge of your seat movie for me. One of those where I don't know where it's going, but I'm there with you.
Yeah.
The ending, I mean, there's really no spoilers that I can give there. I wished it had kind of explained more, but then part of me didn't want more of an explanation because I feel like if there was more, I'd be like, oh, I wish they hadn't explained as much. So I'm going to take it for what it is and just say I had a really good time with that one.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise. I agree. I think that's the only thing holding it off my list is maybe just wanting that little bit more at the end. But again, that's you can criticize that about every movie. It's definitely original, you know.
Cool. All right. Number four favorite thing of the year. I got to give props to Shudder Horror because, again, not just a lot of the movies that we're mentioning, you know, things like Terrified and Satan's Slaves, but getting the exclusives on Mandy, All the Creatures Were Stirring, doing interesting new things like Dead Wax and what's the podcast one? Video Palace.
Yep.
But most importantly, being totally responsible and instrumental in the return of Joe Bob Briggs in a big, big way. And so when you look at Shudder as a company just this year, not only was it cool movies and debuts, we got original show programming from people like Graham Resnick. We got Joe Bob back. And, you know, and Joe Bob was a big part of our year because I thought Chattanooga getting to do Shockwaves with him was a highlight of this podcast.
It's my number three, but I'll switch it to number four to make
great
symmetry.
All right, well, here's
the number return
four.
Of Joe Bob Briggs and Shudder. And our episode with him. That's my exact writing.
Beautiful.
I love that episode. That was actually probably one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. It was cool to do it live, too. But he's just actually even more than both those things was seeing his live show.
I
could have watched that. I swear to God, every day for the next 3 months, he could have kept you just doing chapters on film history.
Yeah.
Because nothing was horror. Very, very little was exploitation. A lot of it was classical Hollywood and sex, how these two things merge. I was just fascinated. And again, it disproves anyone out there going, oh, he's some sort of dumb redneck. It's like, oh yeah, you should have come to the lecture and then you'll
see
who you're dealing with. You know,
and really great at contextualizing everything in terms of film history.
So
that show, how long was that show? Like two hours?
Longer. I think it was like 3.5
So he
hours.
Was going to go through the entire history of sex and exploitation in movies, and he went for 3 hours, which was amazing, and we're laughing, we're having a great time, and we're up to what, like
1965 or something?
Oh my God.
Herschel Gordon Lewis, and he had to stop.
He's like, all right, it's 1965. If you want to hear the rest,
next
come
year.
Back next year. We're like, oh, man.
It was so interesting. Yeah, I agree with you, and I haven't even seen the Thanksgiving stuff yet, so I'm going to pepper some of that, and then we've got some Christmas stuff coming, and news, I guess, that there's a weekly show coming.
Yeah.
It's just nice. And it's cool that he gets a resurgence. He deserves it.
All right.
My number four is Mondo and Death Waltz's Halloween 2-5 vinyl releases with the box set. It just came about at the right time when we were getting so much Halloween stuff. But I do wish the actual slipcase was a little bit larger to hold all the stuff. But I think they did a really terrific job re-releasing 1, 2, and 3 and then giving us 4 and 5 for not for the first time, but I've re-released with beautiful artwork. So very hashtag blessed for that one.
I love that set. I own it.
Yeah.
I do have a problem with part 1, sound-wise. There's a lot of problems with it.
Yeah.
But I understand and commend them for the rest of it. The box is beautiful.
Yeah.
And getting that new version of 3 was pretty spectacular with all like lobby cards.
Well, the 3 is worth it for those little mini posters alone because you get the skull, the witch, and the pumpkin like on a kind of like 3 separate little mini posters that you can hang up anywhere. So, yeah. It's really nice.
I still have the audio tape of Halloween 3 that they put out early.
Oh, yeah.
It's the last tape I ever listened to. And it was, I think we played a jump cut a few times. It's so fucking awesome.
I have the Assault on Precinct 13 version.
Yeah, it's fun that they did that.
I wish I still had – I bought the soundtrack to Halloween 5 on cassette when that came out, when that movie came out. And it was half score, half just terrible pop songs. And I've never been able to find it again since. But
that's funny.
Nice. Becca, number
– my number 4?
Yes.
Staying on brand, Inside number 9. So what? Seriously, guys.
I've never heard her mention this before in my life.
No, it's a British podcast.
Oh, is it?
That you'd like.
A podcast?
Yeah, it's an informative crime thing.
Oh, dear Lord.
Interesting.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's a hotel room.
Oh, yeah. I assume it's a hotel room.
Number 9 is
the hotel room. I think this has been on my list for the past 4 years now because I'm on the 4th season of the show, and all 4 years I've put it on my top 10 for the year because they keep outdoing what I've seen the prior season.
What's the highlight? Because obviously I talked about the one you showed me.
Yeah, you watched the Christmas special.
But from season 3?
4.
Oh, that was from the new season.
No, The Devil of Christmas, I think, was season three. The new season, by far, and there's some amazing stuff in it, but the highlight is their Halloween special. Ooh. They did live on the BBC. And the way that they set it up, it's amazing, where you think you're watching one thing, and then they start having technical difficulties, and then it turns into something else. But the whole thing is live, has some of the best jump scares I've seen on a televised thing. It's just really tight. So 4 seasons, I have been begging you guys to watch it. I think Elric has watched 3 episodes now out of
I think I've watched most of the first season and then the Christmas special. Look, I am in. I am a believer. I have yet to see anything that I would say is even slightly mediocre. This has all been high level. So trust in Becca. I just need to see more of it. I think I need the BritBox thing. I think I need to invest in
BritBox is great because Psychoville, their prior show, and League of Gentlemen is also on there. But seriously, like Inside number 9, every season just keeps upping the ante.
Somebody tweeted at me today. They're like, based on our last episode, they're like, let me explain this to you, Elric. This is how it works, because they're going, oh, these two guys wrote ghost stories.
Oh, yeah, I saw
and
that,
then
yeah.
this person wrote this and this person does Sherlock, and it's like the expanded universe of the people who work on Inside number 9. So I was like, okay, thank you for that.
Well, they're all brilliant. So yeah, definitely if you've got the 4th season, the Halloween special is really
something. I haven't been able to watch
good.
It because I've been too busy reading.
That's right.
Not with your eyeballs. You read with your earballs.
Earball.
Hashtag earball.
Becca's the one not drinking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. All right, we're up to the top 3 movies.
Oh, God.
My number 3, this is one I literally forgot came out this year, and it's what bumped things like Suspiria. I had A Quiet Place on my list at one point, and this one was like, nope, hold on. And it was a Shudder exclusive earlier this year. I swear Shudder's not paying me for any of this. They're my competition, quite frankly. It's Cold Hell.
That's right.
Which was
that was the
great movie about a female cab driver who is totally a badass and doesn't take any shit from anybody. And then she witnesses a serial killer in action across from her apartment. The serial killer looks up and locks eyes with her. And then for the rest of the movie, it's a cat and mouse chase between this serial killer and this badass girl. And she definitely puts up a fight. And there's sequences in here. I think I was talking to Sierra about one where it's like, there's one scene in particular that I got off my couch and started cheering, and she said the same thing. She's like,
did.
Yep, that's the scene.
Uh-huh.
This is excellent. It's more thriller than horror, but because it is a serial killer story, it is scary. It has, you know, the kind of the tension of it. But man, I just thought this movie kicked ass. And it was going to be between this and Revenge.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I loved Revenge. But this I take a little bit more seriously. Like this, from start to finish, could happen 100%, whereas a lot of stuff in Revenge definitely could not.
Yeah.
That's a little bit more fantastical. Yeah. This is more of a straightforward revenge to me.
I also think
Cold
you like
Hell.
This because it also reminded me of South Korean cinema.
Yes,
and
very
you're a big
much
South
so.
Korean guy. So,
yeah.
so what was the one, Runner or something, where the person's chasing the person through the street?
I think it's Chaser.
Chaser. It reminded me of like just that feeling that you get from a movie like Chaser, which is a great movie
too. So my number 3 is Cold Hell.
Cool. My number 3, I guess we just referenced it. It is Ghost Stories, putting it way high up on my list for the sole reason to make Americans watch this movie, because I do think no one's paying attention. I think you're going to find that this is a film that will have serious, serious legs. And also, let's talk about Martin Freeman, who I think maybe helped produce this film. He is phenomenal in the storyline he's in. It takes you by real surprise, some of the things that happen in that story. He's super fun to watch. But the first one reminds me of like a Bava film. Mm-hmm. It's a janitor in this building, and there's just moments in that where the scares are so organic. It's just like, it could be a scare, it could be a mop in the darkness.
Know,
and it just, that one actually, probably of anything I saw this year, it's probably the only thing that I would say in a theater where I was feeling the word scared was probably watching that part of that thing going, oh shit, what's good? Because also when you have a big middle-aged man who isn't scared of things, being scared, you're doing something right in the movie.
And you know, it's funny you mentioned it. It's like Ryan had said, it'd be great to get just the scenes from this year as a montage, because that is one of the scariest bits.
Well, and then the second one has, it's almost like I'm taking like the mom and dad movie that we talked about, but taking that to like 25 and surreal, and you got this boy, and it's just kind of just crazy and bonkers, and you don't really know where to look. I don't know. I think this is a really cool film. I have to see it again, you know, see how everything lands in the end. But man, I just hope more people get to see it.
I need to revisit. My number three is Revenge.
Oh,
cool. I'm glad.
It's just one of those films that I kind of went in apprehensively just because of the nature, the rape revenge nature of it. But then I realized how quickly the power is taken back in that film. And, you know, combined with the kind of electrifying visuals, color palette, leading actress, soundtrack by Rob, Coralie's great direction. I mean, yeah, it's very outlandish at times and defies, you know, the rules of the real world, I feel. But I think that was the whole point. Yeah. I don't think it was supposed to be that grounded. But it's one of those films that definitely stuck with me. And by the time you get to the third act and there's a great role reversal that occurs, then I was like completely all in. It makes you feel uncomfortable at the first half or the first third. Second, third, it's empowerment. It's excitement. It's violence. It's revenge. Third act, you're just all in and you're cheering for this girl.
It's pure adrenaline.
Yeah, it's pure adrenaline.
Cinema. There's also a great performance in this film that people aren't talking about him enough, which is actually the guy who attacks her.
Yeah.
In the last act of this movie, he is unbelievable. He's just one of those performances where he's gross.
Because
and then it's just so interesting to see who he becomes, and when you're scared, how weak you become.
Yeah.
When you become the hunted, it's a really great performance.
It kind of reminded me of, you know, Kurt Russell's turn in Death Proof, you've got this kind of alpha male bullshit, toxic masculinity for a good chunk of it. But the second that he feels weak, then they're just a big baby, you know? And for this guy in Revenge, it's all about survival. That's what I'm talking about when in terms of the kind of role reversal. We've got a fully naked male running around a house covered in blood, like fearing for his life. And that's where I was just like, fuck yeah, dude. Yeah, that's why I love it. So Revenge is great.
It's exciting. That's the thing, to watch just the way it's directed. I just am curious. I love these films where I'm just so curious, what does that director do next? Because you know it's not going to be like that movie because the content can't be. Yeah. So I have no idea. And it makes me super curious. Yeah.
And Rob's score is definitely one of my favorite of the year, along with Campfire Creepers, which is the Alex Aja VR experience.
Oh.
He did a great score for that. It's just... Yeah. Pulse. Got a great pulse to it.
And you can hear an interview with the director of that on Mick Garris' show. He Skyped her
from
France.
Oh, that's right.
And it was really interesting because it was like, you know, it's her first film. So it's first feature anyway. So,
My number three is Overlord.
Oh,
nice. Wow, that's a lot higher.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. Especially the first 20 minutes for me were just really intense and just a wonderful. I'm glad I saw that one in the theater because it was so cinematic during that scene. And there was a movie that came out years ago called Frankenstein's Army that I always liked. It was found footage. It had kind of a similar concept about Nazis doing experiments and creating kind of weird creatures. But it was shot in found footage and you didn't really see much. And this like filled in the gaps for that. And so I really liked where this went. I liked the environment. And I love horror war films. I think that it's just a topic that definitely lends itself to more horrific situations, obviously. So it just things like dog soldiers always kind of, I find them fascinating. So this one was pretty high up on my list. I really liked Overlord.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. It's fun.
Cool. So my number three for favorite things, as broad as it sounds, is, yeah, the continuing success of vinyl soundtracks. I got to give it up. There were a lot of good things that came out this year. Lakeshore Records did the Mandy soundtrack, Hellraiser 2. Death Waltz did the Halloween box set, as Ryan mentioned. But really, Waxworks Records kind of knocked it out of the park on all fronts. They did a Dario Argento trilogy. And that was after the success of they did the Tenebrae soundtrack, and then they did three more of those soundtracks. They restored the original Night of the Living Dead and released that as a vinyl soundtrack. Manhunter, Friday the 13th 5, the original It.
Oh, man, I still need to get Manhunter.
Manhunter's
Shit,
great.
Shit, I forgot about that.
Does that end with Gattavita?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's not the full 20-minute record. Yeah. You know,
one
I have that
of
as
my
well.
Favorite moments in any movie is just him running at a window.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, you're like, fuck yes, with that song. It's
yeah,
so
with
good.
That song for sure.
So good.
But no, Waxworks knocked it out of the park this year, even with the Subscription Club, which had things like The Burbs and Drag Me to Hell. I'm going to slow down this year. I actually, for the first time, I'm not going to do their subscription in the coming year because I just think it's a little too expensive. And again, we're consumers at this point that live in great times where all these labels are doing amazing things, both Blu-ray wise and vinyl. And there comes a point where you have to draw the line and be like, you know what? I don't think I need the soundtrack to the Maniac Netflix series. I'm gonna draw that line right there.
Have you seen it?
No, but it. Regardless, it's like, all right, I'm not fanatical anymore. Yeah. I've discovered horror socks. I have a new thing.
You got to spread that love.
He's got to spread his feet.
Yeah. So that's my number three favorite thing.
My number three favorite was actually my four. I switched it to be on par with. And it's another one you already talked about. It's Return of Fangoria.
Yeah.
And it's not even, I don't know. For me, it's almost more symbolic. I hate to say it because I think the new magazine kicked ass. And I'm like you, there's still some articles I haven't finished reading. But a lot of it is like, I don't feel like the horror landscape feels right with that missing piece.
Yeah.
Because it is a huge part of our childhood, and it was, it's just always a quality thing, and it's a big part of our love for what this is. So just having that word back and knowing that they're getting more into movies makes me happy. And it makes me think they'll be much better movies than they used to make because I think they have access to budgets now, which is a big difference. So I am very happy that Fangoria's returned. And I really enjoyed us doing that magazine thing. That was a lot of fun. Thank you to them. I know we're doing it, being sponsored to do it, but I actually thank them for letting us do it because we got to see it early.
Oh, it's
and privilege. That was super fun. You know? So, yeah.
My number three favorite thing, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. I actually had – we started both number one episodes of both shows at the same – like, you know, one after the other. And then we both realized, hold up, we're not going to be able to consume both and, like, at the same time. We're going to have to, like – fully invest in Haunting of Hill House, which is what we did first because it was just such a grander journey. And I thought Mike Flanagan did a fantastic job at chronicling a generation of siblings who are dealing with a haunted house as well as their own emotional complexities. And I think he did a very good job of it. It didn't go into directions that I thought it would go into. But my God, there are some really, really great scare sequences that Flanagan did with precision and skill. I mean, like, the guy is definitely coming up as, you know, I mean, he's already there, I guess, as a masterful horror filmmaker. I'm very curious to see what he does with Dr. Sleep. But
Jocelyn told me everything afterwards. He like gave me the full
story. Well, I love that he did Dr. Sleep and like a day later had a kid.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing too. Oh my God. Yeah, he had his kid right after. But and then the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, you know, it's one of those things that
Where does it go? I've watched one episode and I liked it, but it was like really late.
I didn't put it on my list because I've only watched the first episode and I was totally in, but I couldn't watch enough to like talk about it.
It's about Sabrina's journey, her defying the patriarchy of, you know, this kind of satanic element, these witches, you know, because all the witches are presumed to, you know, sign their souls over to the Dark Lord and, you know, they're imbued with powers.
When you're 16th or
whatever. Yeah, when you're, and you go to a very special school and you go on and you live your life and do your thing, but you're always indebted to Satan. Mm-hmm. And here Sabrina's like, fuck no. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
you know what?
I like my friends. I like my boyfriend.
Yeah. She's like,
she's that part. Like,
and she's also a halfsy. She's like half witch, half human because her father was a witch and her mother was a human. So she's dealing with that kind of element, which was always a special place for Star Trek people who love love Spock. And, you know, it's like, it's just one of those stories that is, that kind of straddles the line between teen melodrama and then dealing with adult situations. For when, you know, for instance, you've got Sabrina hanging out with her teenage friends and they're talking about how certain books are banned in their school and they're going to rally together to create a club. But then in the next scene, Sabrina enters a room and all her friends are fucking having, like, all the witch friends are having an orgy. And you're like, oh, okay, this is interesting. So it's both adult and teen at the same time, but it's also probably the most gorgeous show that I've seen on television this year. Very beautiful photography, beautiful production design, beautiful costumes. It's a world I love to live in. I think Kiernan Shipka is a great Sabrina, but far more interesting than Sabrina is a lot of the characters around her, especially the aunts that she lives with.
I like Miranda Otto's in there.
Miranda Otto's in it. Yeah, it's just a great, it's a great fun world, and it's definitely one of my favorite shows this year, and I'm very eager. I think
well, by the time you hear this, holiday episode.
That's right, which I haven't seen yet. But yeah, it's a great show.
Excellent. So my number three is horror conventions and festivals, which is really freaking broad.
In general, you have a favorite this year?
Texas Frightmare. I mean, I absolutely love Texas Frightmare. We always have a blast there.
We had good times there, didn't we?
We did.
Frightmare feels like,
it's like home.
Remember that time we lost Becca?
Wait, when did you guys
see Becca standing on the roof and we're like, Becca, come down. And Becca's like, I'm a golden god.
Yeah.
We're like, Becca, come down.
I don't, I've seen that movie. Did I dive into the pool, guys? And then we all sang Tiny Dancer on the bus the next morning. And it was really
beautiful. Because we all know it's Elric we lost.
Yeah, we lost Elric, if anybody.
We danced like Coyote Ugly. That's what we did.
That's exactly what we did.
With
Udo Kier.
No,
Texas Frightmare is always a blast. Chattanooga was great this year. I keep telling you guys you need to come out for it, but I always have fun at Phoenix Comic Con. We have so many Shockwaves listeners that come out for that to listen to me speak.
We're not coming. You can't bring us out.
I know. No one's coming.
Becca's got her groupies.
It's always, no, I'm not even close, because every single year they're like, is Ryan? What about Rob? Is Elric coming this year? And I'm like, no, guys, it's just me again.
I only go to Tennessee. That's my thing. It's my jam.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I love traveling because it kind of renews my horror spirit to get out of my living room and socialize.
I mean, I think for our show, for me and our show, it was part of the engine that keeps you going, because you suddenly travel to somewhere and they tell you that they listen to your show and what it means to them, and suddenly you're like, oh, that's really cool.
That's it.
And that's a total energizer to what you do, because we do this in a little office. We sometimes see reviews online. We see Facebook groups, but it is so different when you meet somebody and you let them touch your face. That is different.
That is the thing, isn't it?
That's a thing we should leave behind.
Now that is a thing.
I agree with
Let's make the face touching. This year you can stroke his chest.
It's more of a back rub.
It's totally more intimate. Becca, don't do that.
It's too late, Becca. You already signed up. it's a chest touching.
No, wait. I'm not in for this. It's
well, weird. I know. You're going to help sign people up, though, so it's good. You're like my pimp. I like it.
Wow.
So, yeah, Hark.
So her number three is pimping Elric. I like it. Wow. A nice thing to have is your number three. Let's move on.
Okay, number two movie for me is Satan's Slaves.
Oh, awesome that it went that high.
I just saw this and I just loved it.
Dude,
because
this movie's so good.
It's an Indonesian movie, and it's also on Shudder right now. And it's just scary. Like, this thing scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
It had some really impressive stuff. And basically, I mean, I'm always, it's children and elderly people in with a slight supernatural angle, and I'm kind of off kilter.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's this gimmick. Well, it's not a gimmick, but basically there's this family and the mother is ill in a bed upstairs, and she always rings this little bell. Yeah. And kind of the things you see in a room and how that bell comes in a little bit later, just scary as hell. You know, there was just so many great moments like that. I was just blown away by this movie. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where it was going. I thought the family dynamic was really interesting, the kids. And then even, you know, there's some twists and turns I definitely didn't see coming that I thought were pretty cool. And so, you know, it's always interesting when there's a movie where you're like, oh, it could end right now. I'm not even sure where. Mm. And then a whole nother element gets introduced. More than anything, it's just this really blew me out. It just scared the crap out of me. And it's very hard for me to get scared these days. So
Yeah, and the scariest part is they pee on the weird floor thing.
I was confused by that. Because
it's
I was like
a urinal, but it's part of the bathroom. And I'm like, well, you shouldn't pee there, but no, that's but just the just, normal thing to
they
do.
They walked into the bathroom and literally dropped trowel and pissed on the floor. And I was like, is this a thing? It's a thing, I think. So,
but it definitely, yeah, no, I'm with you. And I'm actually going to invalidate my entire list because it was like in it was right at that cusp. Because sometimes it's hard to add a movie you just saw.
Yep.
And I went, even just hearing you talk about it, I was like, yeah, there's no way that's not one of my 10 favorite movies.
Yeah.
100%
no,
it is. So yeah. I feel kind of lame.
Anything that has like at least three or four consistently great scares.
Oh, it's the sheep one with that sheet.
Oh my god, the sheep is so good. Yeah. No, that was
that's James Wan level.
It's my first runner up.
Okay,
Because that was, and I think that depending if Ryan's seen it, it becomes Shockwaves approved.
Oh no, I've seen it. Yeah,
okay, yeah.
Is it thumbs up?
Shockwaves approved.
Yeah,
great.
No, that one by far one of my scariest sequences of the year. There was so much going on in that movie that it was just so tense.
Yeah, and in reality, it's like I put Suspiria 10, it's like I find Suspiria interesting, but I preferred watching Satan's Slayer.
Exactly. Yeah, Satan's Slayer is way more fun.
It gave
fun.
Me more as a horror film, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
And I have to agree with that because, like, I put Lizzie on my list because I wanted it to get exposure, but it's definitely a much slower paced story that's more drama about relationships and character studies. Yeah. I had a fucking blast watching Satan's Slayer.
It's definitely, the most, that and Terrified are the biggest surprises of the year where I knew nothing, especially Satan's Slayer. I mean, that title did not make me want to watch that movie.
And, and their cover art, the American cover art, it's terrible. But then you look at like the artsy foreign poster and like just go see it.
And that it was a huge hit in its country. It's like if this isn't some small movie, this is like a gigantic hit. And now we need to track down that original movie and see what it's like because I bet it's fun. Which one are we up to? Two. My number two is kind of my favorite horror movie of the year, and then the one above it I think is the best horror movie of the year. My number two is it was number something on yours, and it's been my favorite pretty much the whole year. It's The Ritual. I think The Ritual.
Did you just give it away?
No, that's way down. We'll get there later. I think The Ritual is, it's just completely my kind of horror film. Mm-hmm. And the only thing it does, like it would be so easily number one, but it just, for me, that there's a last beat, kind of an emotional comeuppance to this movie that I think on a script level was missed, where it shouldn't have been. It's like very clear how this movie could just be a perfect fucking thing. And it just is a bit of a shame. It kind of lets one of the main characters off the hook, I think, a little bit. But man, I love the creature. I love the buildup. I think the scariest part isn't the creature. It's the first time they go in the fucking house and there's this wood thing and then they all have this nightmare and then they all wake up in weird places. It's like, this is like what I thought and what was advertised Blair Witch was going to be when Brad put his review up, and I thought it'd be that scary. Then I watched this movie and I was like, no, that's exactly what this was, you know? My biggest regrets on this one should have been theatrical. I think this film would have fucking killed on screen, not necessarily financially, but the way it's shot is a big screen. It's a lot of it's wide and it's showing the woods and it's obviously very British. So this is David Bruckner, who's somebody I'm really glad to see getting to do his features alone and show what he's got. He's always been a very cerebral, smart filmmaker, but I love this movie, and it's definitely the most me horror film of this year in terms of the kind of things I love to see in a horror film. And I also think the stuff about masculinity, I like Deliverance is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I love a movie that actually goes, this isn't promoting masculinity, this is deconstructing it, looking at where it's weak and what that problem with those weaknesses, how you could avoid it. And one of my problems is by the end one of the characters doesn't fully get what he kind of needs to see about him, the weakness in himself. But even so, the whole movie is really looking at those things, and I think it does it really well. I also think Bruckner's part of VHS is doing some of that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just watching, oh, it's misogyny. It's like, no, I think he's – also knowing when you know Bruckner, you're like, he's not one of those guys. He's – you know. So I think this movie's fantastic and a bit of a sleeper on Netflix. I mean, obviously, horror people like us are into it, and a lot of you probably are, but I think there's probably a lot of people who never push play on that
thing. Yeah, and I'm hoping they'll give it a shot now that they're hearing it come up on these lists.
Ritual.
Great one.
Yeah, I like Ritual. Number two for me is Hereditary. This is a film that made a Sundance splash and instantly kind of rose to the number one must-see list. And when I finally saw it, I don't think it disappointed. I didn't know what to expect going in. And I think that it is, you know, kind of one of those pure nightmare fuel movies where it is the worst possible scenario occurring over and over and over again, where it's like you've got this wonderful family, you've got this little girl who's a little, you know, a little weird, a little messed up, and then once you know, I mean, like, it's no surprise. I mean, it's, and it's not a spoiler at all. Once she is killed, it's like, oh my God, okay, what's the brother going to do in response to that? And he does the worst possible thing you can do because he is just completely shell-shocked.
You mean
by the situation.
Most teenagerly thing possible.
And the most teenagerly
That's
thing.
That's the most teenage thing I've ever seen in a movie. Like, no, I think every teenager would.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
Sadly. You know?
And so it just keeps progressively getting worse. And I like those kinds of movies that just pile on the dread and make you feel bad. I mean, like, I just felt really bad for Gabriel Byrne's father character in this movie.
He was trying to hold it together.
He was really trying. I mean, like, honestly.
I don't know, guys. I still think he was kind of a jerk.
Wait, you thought he was a jerk?
I thought he was too. I thought he was too soft and too absent.
Yeah, he was definitely like his character in treatment.
But you didn't think that was his emotional trigger? Like, he didn't know how to, like, because obviously Toni Collette went into pure grief. Her son went into pure, like, kind of emotional hibernation mm-hmm. mode. Gabriel Byrne, you know, just didn't know how to step up. I mean, like, I feel like he was just at a loss the entire time. He didn't know what to do.
I was bothered by his weakness.
Interesting.
Like, if I was grieving to that extent, to have somebody with me who's just like put his hands up in the air and then, you know, shove them in a pocket and go stand in the corner, that would drive me fucking nuts.
Time for dinner, and she's like fucking making a little tableau of the dead daughter.
And he's just like,
I don't know what to do.
Honey, I don't know what to do. And then he just walks out. Like, she was giving so many goddamn signals, and for him to just be like, it's cool, honey, whenever you're ready, I'll be downstairs standing in the corner with my fingers stuck in my ears.
He bothered me so much in that movie. All right, I see that. But it was just one of those things.
It's not him. It's his character.
Yeah.
No, I'm not dissing Gabriel. Are you taking offense for Gabriel Byrne here?
No, but it's funny because he played, if you ever saw, one of the best shows I've ever seen was In Treatment. I mean, it was really amazing.
And it's a very similar character.
Yeah, he is. He's playing this very, he's trying to be empathetic, but I agree, he does come off as soft, and he's not, it's that, if you ever, it's a really weird thing to have read, but I was in a screenwriting class when I was like 20, and they made me read Women Are From Mars, Men Are From Venus.
I read that in an English class.
Yeah, and I was like, fuck this, I don't want to read this. And then when I started reading it, I was like, holy shit, they know all the secrets. And what was funny about it, the one thing that always stayed with me was that this idea that men are just trying to fix things and a woman wants to be heard doesn't necessarily want the thing fixed. I was like, oh, what a bunch of pop psychology. I have never heard anything more accurate to my experiences since then in my life. And that movie is a crystallization. He thinks he can just help Taylor and fix the situation. But what she really needed was somebody to fucking feel her same pain. Yeah. And he didn't give that to her. So she fucking goes. So it's just interesting.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that later.
Yeah. but it just keeps kind of digging you into this hell that you can't get out of. And by the time, you know, Toni Collette is hovering over, you know, at the top of the ceiling, I mean, like, there are some really, really standout nightmare sequences. And I love the soundtrack. I love the visuals. I mean, like, there's a lot of people who are like, I didn't get the ending. It's like, I kind of followed it pretty well, guys. I mean, like, all the clues were there. But yeah, it's just one of those movies I just needed to see twice this year. And, I loved it even more on the second time around. So, and I'm very eager to buy I still haven't bought the 4K Blu-ray yet, but I'm very eager to dive into that. So.
Yeah. My number two is Anna and the Apocalypse. Yay. So, which was, you guys could have called that at the beginning of the year. You could have just said what's going to be.
I figured, but I wondered if, like, maybe because you also just made your own Christmas movie, are you going to be burnt out on Christmas?
No. I have other Christmas movies ready to go. I love Christmas movies in general. Anna and the Apocalypse was definitely like, okay, well, a couple of weeks ago, Matt Curry Holmes texted me and he goes, I just saw Anne and the Apocalypse and I swear to God they made it just for you.
And it's true.
It's literally just like a mix of everything that I love in the world, and it's at Christmas time. So yeah, that was a given. Anne and the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Beautiful. My number two favorite thing of the year is festivals and theatrical horror. I'm talking about Beyond Fest. I'm talking about Chattanooga Film Festival. We did a lot of traveling this year. Mm-hmm. Again, the Halloween screening that we got to do, not just at Beyond Fest, but going to see it opening night with a group of friends.
That Arizona trip we all did together, that was fucking rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really great.
Remember when we lost Becca in Arizona?
Actually, it was me you lost that time. I was the one dying that time.
I jumped off a roof, screamed over the golden god.
I think I probably owe them now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love how in Ryan's stories I get lost in every scenario. Like, I just
That's
wander.
My nightmare, Becca. I don't want to lose you.
I wander away from the group. I just walk straight into the desert, and then eventually, hours later, somebody's like, "Where's Becca?" And then the hilarity.
I think we're more likely to lose Ernie as he walks out.
I would have gone with Drunk Elric, but okay.
Oof, Drunk Elric was tough, man.
That was one. Was that one of your favorite things?
That was one of my least favorite moments of the year. But
it was amusing.
One of Becca's favorites.
Yeah,
well, it's amusing in retrospect, not while it was happening.
No. And while it was happening, all I could think was, "Are we going to have to fucking call the EMTs because Elric is like?"
I was fine.
I wasn't even
really drunk from what Becca said.
Yeah, all right.
Really drunk.
So it's just festivals, and this is the year I've done the most traveling and the most seeing movies with different types of people in different places, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, you went all the way to the UK. I forgot about that.
UK for Fright Fest. I saw movies in Paris. Mm. We went to a couple of film festivals, and yeah, it's just been a great year. So, what's your number two favorite thing, Elric?
My number two favorite thing is Cronenberg-thon.
Ooh,
at Beyond Fest.
I forgot about that.
That was awesome.
Funnily enough, like, I really loved the couple. I think I got two. I saw Dead Ringers with you, and I saw the Videodrome one where he talked about that with and Debbie Harry was there. It was pretty crazy with Dick. But weirdly enough, like the part, and this shows, like, I guess the true cinephilia of my nature. My favorite part. Well, my favorite part was watching.
Something you can catch. It itches.
The cinephilia.
We do catch it.
Uzi
was actually one of the ones where he wasn't there. It was where I got to see his first four films in a row, and he wasn't even there that night. So it wasn't until the next late that night I got to see him. But man, it made a real impression on me seeing those first four films of his as an artist, the growth, each film just being a tiny step. And it wasn't like big shifts. He was one of the most perfect, like a river as an artist. And so let's talk about
Elric is just throwing words out at this point.
Perfect like a river.
He's like syphilis, river, cinephilia.
Well, somehow
syphilis is a real word.
Syphilitic river does kind of sound Cronenberg. So
I do
let's
have
just
Spinell on my shirt, and he has poetry in his eyes.
Poetry in your eyes.
I really loved it. I loved seeing those four films together, and it definitely the big film. It gave me just such a big appreciation for now was The Brood, which I always liked, but now I love. I just went to become my favorite of his films, which it never was. It was always
welcome.
Yeah, no, it's no, and that wow. And I think Shivers as well. I think Shivers is real for a first film. It's fucking so great and so ahead of its time. And then the nice surprise of seeing him for those who unfortunately didn't get to be there is this guy's a fucking laugh riot. He is not who you think he's going to be. Mm-mm. His movies are so like dry and cold and cerebral for the most part, and then here comes this guy who's like. Basically, stand-up comic type. Everything in acerbic wit. Yes, snarky.
It was so snarky.
Even to Mick, who's his buddy, and he was shooting Mick down and go, Mick, you might as well just leave now because I can do this. And, I mean, it was crazy, and I saw him over two nights, and both nights were even crazier. It was very fun to see because I always thought of him like maybe a bit more carpenter, curmudgeonly, that he wouldn't want to come. He doesn't want to come to a horror thing. He doesn't want to talk about his horror films, but he was having a blast. So that was definitely high up there on the bucket list. The only way I could top that would be a Lynch thing. I've never seen Lynch live in anything, so one day.
Wow.
My number two thing is what we've already discussed, Fangoria's return. Obviously, we've all had a hand in Fangoria's history at one point or another, but for me, I mean, like, it was, you know, I don't know. I almost, when we did the opening, I was just like, almost had tears in my eyes because it was something that was so ingrained into my youth as something that was at first something I could never have and then something I embraced and something I looked forward to every month and then looked forward to reading. It became my film history. It became my, my film school. It became a lot of things to me. And when it went away, when it started to kind of, peter out, I was a little disappointed, but to see it come back with so much love and care put into it. And like you, Rob, I'm still getting through it.
Yeah, I don't want to sit there one day and read front to back.
I just finished the kind of the Bastard Sons of Halloween article, which is a great retrospective on all the slashers that were
and illustrations.
And illustration really by cool. Gary Poland, yeah. So it's just kind of I flag one for, you know, the weekend or the morning I have to just kind of kick back and read, and I just dive right in. And it's incredibly well written, and yeah, I'm now very anxious and eager for episode, issue two. So I'm like, oh, should I go finish this?
Are they timing that
January.
For a holiday?
January.
Oh, January. Yeah. That's soon, yeah.
Well, come and see him. Becca, number two.
My number two is The Return of Fangoria.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This one.
Jumping on the bandwagon, dude.
Yeah, you're right. I have no connection with it whatsoever. No, this one, I mean, this was hard for me. Like, I never discussed on air how hard it was for me. And you guys saw tiny glimpses, but I mean, I was with the company for 13 years. And to see it just kind of slowly fizzle, and it was painstaking. And I mean, like, everyone who was working at Fangoria at that time, like Chris, Mike, Tony, Sam, and I, we all talked about how we did what we did, not because we were making bank or that the medical insurance was great or anything like that, that it was always just, it meant the world to us. And that we would not stop. We would do anything we needed to make sure that Fango was still alive and still kicking and breathing. And then to finally have to say goodbye to it was traumatizing. I mean, like, I was just a wreck for weeks afterwards. And just kind of some of the final throes of it were just painstaking. And then finally, the day that Dallas called me and were like, I just brought it and we're bringing you out to Texas next weekend and you're going to walk us through everything and how you did everything. And it just elated is the only way I can describe it. And then getting to help them set it back up and meet the new team and everything. And I'm still working with them in a lot of capacity. Some of the stuff they have coming up is really cool. It just meant the world to me to see it come back. And it was one of those things where for a stretch, when I was telling people that I used to work for Fangoria, I would say it was sadness, like a decade worth of my life. Like, yeah, I used to work for Fangoria. Because it was like lamenting someone I knew who had died. And now I can say it like, yeah, I used to work for Fangoria for 13 years. Oh my gosh, it's back. Have you heard? No, I've heard it's back. And so it's much more of like it's brought a lot of meaning and joy back to that long stretch of my time.
Yeah, that sadness you had in letting go is how I felt when Killer POV died. For about 34 minutes.
34 minutes?
24 hours.
34 minutes before the shockwave.
We drove from Van Nuys to Echo Park to tape a new episode,
The amount of people who I hear from still to this day who tell me, oh my God, that day where you guys posted the thing, I was so and then like an hour later, it's like, now we're shockwaves with Ryan.
And you were pushing for us to do that much sooner.
I know.
Like, no, we have to let people know. I was like, Elric, calm down. Let him miss us for a day.
Give him a day.
It was, but anyway, sorry to cheapen your sadness. Yeah.
But. Kane, I just got heartfelt. Why are you pulling us back?
Can I tell you about how I almost got molested by a pedophile on a train?
That was weeks ago you told us that story.
While holding my Batman comic book.
So, wait, let's go back to that story for 1 second. Was that his kid or was that just some kid he got, you think?
Apparently it was his son and his friends. That might have been part of the scout group.
So he wasn't. Okay.
I don't remember. It was so long ago, guys.
And that was adapted into the Happiness.
No, we want to know. I assume that it was like the creepy old man who ran the bike shop, like in Different Strokes.
Man, that Different Strokes episode messed us all up.
What the fuck happened to Dudley? Why are you leaving Dudley there,
didn't
Arnold?
Didn't want Dudley to dress like Tarzan or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Like,
and then Arnold like got creeped out and
he
like,
ran away.
Left him there.
Man,
what the fuck? Like, what the fuck, Arnold?
Wasn't he like shirtless too?
And then
no, he was shirtless. Yeah. He was gonna take pictures. And I remember he was like, "Let's do a jungle shoot." And I was like, "Oh my God! I just want to keep playing G.I. Joe's. Leave this. What's happening?"
It got so twisted.
No, that's anyway. Like shit that traumatizes you. That's Kim. Okay.
Different strokes.
Yeah. So wait a minute. Pedophilia not shockwaves approved. Boom. So you hear it, us pedophiles? No, you are not approved.
Awful. Wow. Awful. Wow.
That's pretty strong of us. Political. I know. Get a little crazy. Lost right. at least
hey
one
guys,
viewer.
We
that's number one.
Number one. All right. Number one movie for me is Mandy.
Oh, yes. Cool. Nice.
And I knew it was going to be on my list. And
one thing
kept,
put it so high.
It kept alternating because Satan Slaves was up there at one point. And, you know, again, there's all these one and the apocalypse. The thing about Mandy, and I've only seen it the one time on the big screen, is when I think of this year, something that encompasses
the feeling
horror, feeling like I'm living a nightmare. It is the 2+ hours that we sat in the theater watching that movie that has still stuck with me. Like, and I think that is, for 2018, that is 2 hours of pure horror right there. That is probably the best horror movie
I've
seen this
year. Right, because you have cults, you have a weak white man with blonde hair leading a group of people weekly.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I'll chime in because it is my number one as well.
Yeah.
And made sure
I
saw it at the beginning of the year when I played at Sundance. I revisited it last week with Ciara, who had never seen it, and it was a lot of joy seeing her go through the kind of cycles of the film, because at first it was like, this movie's really weird, what's going on, and I was like, just you wait. And then it's Cage forging a battle axe and you know, you've got Bill Duke and the greatest bulldog of all time.
Yes.
And you know, it's a fever dream movie that's kind of powered by a really robust engine of revenge and cosmic dread and beauty and all of the, you know, there's just like a lot of stuff going on. And you know what I took away from, I regret not being here for the Panos Cosmatos episode. I really do, because I would have loved to have picked his brain a little bit more about that movie, but you guys did a great job with it. Because one of the great things I really loved what you guys said is Panos, Nicolas Cage is one of the great actors of our time who has a lot of tools in his toolbox, and Panos just knew how to use them. There's a lot of cheap directors who come to Nick Cage and go be in my movie because it fulfills a fucking foreign sales box, and you're just going to walk through this movie and do your thing, and Nick Cage is going to be like, okay. But when there are directors who step up and go, you know what, I'm going to challenge you with some material, I'm going to push you through this, I'm going to use those tools you have to deliver a cool performance. You know what? And Panos knew how to do that.
Also in recognizing that because he wanted Nicolas Cage for the villain.
Right, which is super interesting.
And Cage saying he wanted to be the other character, and then recognizing, wait, I can use those tools in his toolbox that way.
Yeah, and the guy he cast as a villain
is brilliant. That's a brilliant performance.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, rewatching, I completely forgot about the animated sequences. I forgot about how great that there was that one moment when I call them the Cenobikers come up, and they're just like,
Cenobikers. You just coined it.
And they're like blood for blood, and they're like, wait a minute, what do you mean blood for blood? But when they you know, do their home invasion gig, and there's that one dude with the bleached hair standing outside the window, and one of the Cenobikers comes behind him and takes one of the cultists away, you're like, oh, okay, blood for blood. They're going to take one of their own. They don't care. Yeah. And that's a very nightmarish sequence that happened, you know, where that all happens. I think the movie is great.
I love about that Panos episode where we were asking about, like, I read that he, you know, you told Nicolas Cage to be like Jason, and he was more specific. He's like, yeah, I told Nicolas Cage to watch Friday 13th, 7, The New Blood.
Which I like, love.
Yeah, it's like that he watched that, and then now I think of him in the ending when he doesn't talk. Yeah. And I'm like, he's totally Kane Hodder's Jason right there.
Yeah, but no, what I say about Nick Cage, because I truly believe he's the best screen actor. Like, what I think it is that I believe that every film is the same to him, what he brings. And it's just that people don't know what to do with him. And so when you have David Lynch, or you have somebody who really knows how to shape a great performance, but I don't think Nick Cage phones anything. And I think he goes to these straight to TV movies, and then no one does anything with him, and he gives him a role that's just A to B.
Yeah.
That's why I think he's so interesting. That's why I do think he's sometimes over top, kind of like Brando in that way. It's just like, he's going to give you this whole thing, and it's up to you how you shape it. He's so good. And this was such a fun return to form. And I think it satisfied something we'd all been saying. I've been saying for years, is like, I'd love to see Nick Cage in a Tarantino film. Yeah. This satisfied that urge. I don't even need that now. That was that thing.
Yeah. And even just beyond the kind of performances and all that stuff, conceptually and visually, Panos tapped into the kind of fantasy art books I used to grow up looking at, you know, like the Frank Frazetta imagery. You know, when you look at a Frank Frazetta image and you're seeing this kind of very masculine warrior in the foreground, and in the background, it's these very ominous looking mountains with a, you know, either just like a blazing moon or something like that. And Panos just kind of evoked all of that imagery that was really great.
The whole movie looks like it should be painted on the side of a van.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Or like, it's like a Molly Hatchet album.
And the book cover she's reading. Yeah. And the fonts that they use for all the interchapters are so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's also just, there's a scene, this isn't really a spoiler, but the scene where, man, I think one of the scenes like of America this year in terms of Me Too and everything, the scene where she laughs at his penis.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And the so reaction good. It gets, but also the sheer, it feels like a cathartic thing, especially I remember those hearings were for the Supreme Judge were happening around the same time. But when she laughs, I just felt reverberations through myself, like, oh, fuck, this is like, and it's just really intense. And, yeah. and you know what's going to happen when you see that, and it's going to be bad, but it's, I don't know, it's, yeah, it's good. I can't wait to see it again. I've only seen it that one time in the theater, and but it's definitely one of my favorite films.
Yeah. Yeah, the score is great. I mean, it's just and she,
why was that disqualified? I just I read that
it was disqualified because thing. They did a soft VOD release before it had completed theatrical.
God, what
it's
stupid
such
rules.
Stupid yeah. rules Jesus that they Christ. Have now, and the fact that the Academy is completely disregarding anything that does a VOD release. Like if it goes straight to VOD in any capacity, it's not Oscar qualifying.
Their funeral. That's what happens yeah. with anyone trying to hold on to these things of how things used to be. It's like you have to, all bets are off now.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is fantastic. And kind of playing on Andrea Riseborough's performance, she reminds me of, you know, this kind of classical figure that you would see in fantasy movies.
She's like
where
elfin.
Like the, yeah, very elfin or like
a dryad.
Someone, I don't know what that is.
It's like a wood nymph.
Oh, okay. But something that you know, a female that evokes strength and power in kind of very mysterious ways. It's like the person, she's like the person that the wizard and the group would go and try to find for, you know, for some sort of, I don't know, power or something like that. And I would have liked to have seen, you know, like, I mean, obviously there'd be no movie if she didn't die, but it's like, I would like to see more of what her and Cage's character, what their relationship brought, because I just love that scene where they're just eating dinner and watching a weird fucking random movie on like, what seemed like WPIX. It was just like, and the kind of intensity Cage brings with just, he's wrapped up in the fucking movie. It's just a really bad sci-fi horror movie. And he's just there like enraptured by it. It's just, it's a great,
well,
like, mesmerizing film.
It's a scene where they see each other for the first time towards the end.
Oh yeah.
And that's a scene where you just feel it and you get it and you understand loss. It's just beautiful. It's
yeah. Like, Panos, keep making movies, dude. Yeah. I mean, adult, and do them in shorter time.
Every couple years.
Oh, fuck.
So that was our number one, Ryan and I. Elric, number one
number
for you.
Number one. Then people, this is going to
surprise. I feel like you spoiled it already.
I think we know what you're going for.
People are
going
to be a little surprised because this isn't a me type of movie. My number one is Slender Man.
Wow.
I watched it last night. I watched 4 minutes of it.
Wow. Elric, man.
No.
Great Slender trailer. Man.
Huh?
Good trailer.
Yeah. Hereditary is my number one. Just because I think it's one of the most ballsy debuts I've ever seen. I mean, it's like a movie like Don't Look Now, but Don't Look Now was not Rogue's first film. This is a movie with such assurance. It's definitely a Bergman movie that goes horror, you know, and you can see his influences, especially in like art house cinema. There's things about it that go on a little too long for me. There's a couple, I feel like the ending bleeds out a little, could have cut out earlier. There's things that didn't need to be explained that are explained a little. I feel like it almost feels like he needed to go even more into the house to eliminate just those little hanging threads, because I think everyone would have still emotionally gotten it. But the way I saw that film was in a packed room full of hardened horror people who have seen it all. And I remember you could hear a fucking pin drop. Everyone looked devastated even the ones who didn't like the movie, which was quite half the crowd, they were like, just, you know, they're hollowed out emotionally. And it was so fun to just talk to them all afterwards and go, that guy just fucked you all up with his first movie. And everyone's great in it. Toni Collette gives one of my favorite performances of the year period in a long time. I just think it's a really rich film. It's going to, you know, I feel like we have a couple of these every year, whether it's The Witch or these movies that will stand the test of time. But this is even more risky than The Witch. Like, The Witch is a perfect thing for what it is, but it's also a little easier, I think, to create that atmosphere. This atmosphere takes these crazy risks, some of them with style, some with performance, some with tone. There's a scene in this where she just tells the truth to her son.
Mm-hmm.
That is the craziest thing I've seen this year. It's the most shocking, the most devastating. You're just like, fuck. And when she holds her mouth, like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. You're like, oh, my God. That's worse than anything you can do in this movie. So it shows just how the worst thing you can do is love someone. Because the love that is shared in this family is quite brutal. And it's just – and like Becca said, some of the inability to – truly express themselves is what undoes them, as happens in many great films.
Yeah.
But this film is really special.
Yeah.
Great. Becca, you're number one.
Terrified.
Terrified.
Yeah.
Rare. Interesting. All right.
Honestly, wait, does that mean Hereditary is not in your 10?
No, it isn't. It is right there on my first runner-ups, right next to Satan Slaves. Yeah, but Terrified just was a perfect viewing experience for me. And afterwards, I was looking back and I was like, yeah, it would have been cool if we followed one story throughout. But at the time, I didn't care. I liked it as an anthology film. I thought it was cool that we saw a little bit of these like four or three houses on this cul-de-sac and then how they kind of blended together. And I could see, you know, maybe weaving the private investigator through and making him the thread. I don't have a fucking clue what happened in that movie. I don't care. I don't want an explanation. If they had started giving any more explanation, I think it would have lost it for me. It was scare sequence after scare sequence. I screamed at one point, which I have not done in years. Yeah. And so it was something I had never seen before. There was a lot of stuff in there that I had never seen before. And it energized me. And I left it going, that was a great movie. Excited for the next thing I was going to watch. So that's awesome. What I look for in horror.
Nice.
So Terrified.
Nice.
Wow. Do we have runner-ups?
You know what? So
no, we've got
you left out Hereditary. Uh-huh. I left out Anna and the Apocalypse. Uh-huh. Interesting.
I left out Suspiria, A Quiet Place, Cargo, Veronica, Revenge, and The Ritual. And I loved all those movies. They were very that's why I still have them on my list, is because they were on my list at one point. But yeah, my 10 favorites.
Same
yeah, I have four that Tragedy Girls I really
liked. Wait, that's last year.
Is it technically?
No, it was last year. It was on our last year list.
Yeah. Really?
You might not have seen it till this
year. I don't think I saw it till this year because when I was looking over everything.
It was definitely on my end of my list last year, I think.
So Steven Soderbergh's Unsane was definitely kind of...
No, it's interesting movie.
It was wavering on my 10. I was fascinated by it.
Pure thriller, but it's a fun one.
For just pure fun, I really enjoyed Rampage. So that one,
it
wouldn't have made, like, it was not top 10, but it was one of those, when I was looking back, I was just like, that was just a fun movie. And then the first half of Cloverfield Paradox, only the first half. I was there for the first half. Would not have made my top 10, but it was definitely, when I was looking back at what I watched this year, I was like, I really enjoyed that first half, and then it went elsewhere. But yeah. So top 10 things of the year. We still have to do our number one.
Yeah. For me, it is, believe it or not, just Halloween season in Los Angeles. It's my favorite time of year. My girlfriend flew out from Paris, and we got to do Universal Halloween Horror Nights, Not Scary Farm, The Haunted Hayride, Beyond Fest was happening. There's a couple of local haunts all over town, like Rotten Apple 907, the Backwoods Maze. There's just something, you know, and usually Son of Monster Palooza is the event that kicks it off in mid to late September. There's just something special about, I mean, you know, I've been in New York for a Halloween season. I've been all over the place, and there's something so special and unique about Halloween season mid-September straight through October 31st here in Los Angeles. And this is like the best one I've ever had. So that's my favorite. That was my favorite thing of the year, was Halloween season this year.
It was tiring.
It was tiring, but I still loved it.
Oh, so I traveled. I went to Knoxville for that one. My number one favorite thing I would place above Hereditary is the number one thing of the year. I think The Haunting of Hill House is the best horror creation of the year. I think it by a long way. Even though I think Hereditary is the more ballsy and surprising thing, I think this is just utterly mesmerizing. Once I got to like episode 4 and 5, I was like, Jesus Christ, I've never been this emotionally engaged in anything in the horror realm. And as interested and as aesthetically pleased with just the placement of things within the frame. You talked about how beautiful Sabrina looks. I think this looks just gorgeous. Some of the photography.
Becca, wait till you get to episode 6.
That's what everybody keeps telling me is like, because I have to say 1 and 2 were great.
Yeah.
3 was a little bit slower. And that's, I've paused on it just because I'm like, okay, I have to get myself back in. But everyone just keeps telling me to get to 6.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think they're all great. And I mean, the magic of that show, and why I think you're correct in saying it's one of the best horror things, is anytime anything reaches outside the horror audience, I know plenty of non-horror fans, people that are scared of horror movies, that love that show. And it's because of that family, the emotional attachment that we have to those characters.
Which is exactly, I mean, it's so, you know, people were making that.
People compare it to Six Feet Under.
And it's so true, because I came to that show late and, like, you know, probably right after it finished, I think, and I was just floored. Like, people told me to watch, I was like, okay, that's Six Feet. And I just couldn't even believe how good a show it was. I was just so, it's the first time I think I loved characters, where I love these people. I feel like I'm part of the family. I don't want to see bad things happen to them. I feel like there isn't quite that depth here, because they're already in such a, you don't get a chance to get to know them normally. They're already in all these tragedy modes. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, just such a great look at grief and the sad sacrifices that family make. I think Henry Thomas is brilliant in it.
Oh, great.
And I think it's just, I think it's so good, and it shows such freaking maturity, I think, in what in the range of what Flanagan's been working towards, that it makes you go, okay, he's now a modern master with that step. Like, he joins James Wan and the couple other people we have right now, and it's just fantastic. So if we weren't doing the two lists, I had planned that that'd be my one, Hereditary would be two, and that'd piss you guys off because it's TV. But it doesn't, again, like, that really doesn't feel like TV to me. That really felt like, yes, that was a 10-hour movie that they broke up, but it's also so purposefully created in chapters,
yeah,
like TV. So it's really
or
special.
A great novel.
Yeah, great novel. It's very novelistic. And I, to be honest, even the first two episodes, I wasn't sure I was going to love it. I was like, oh, this is pretty good, and maybe going, but it doesn't remind me of The Haunting. And then, you know, it starts to kick into gear. So if you haven't done it yet, perfect time.
Yep. My number one thing is The Return of Joe Bob. Yeah. I will tell you, at the beginning of 2018, when we were embarking on principal photography of Halloween, I would kind of go through a routine every morning or before the shoot when I was just kind of getting up and getting ready for my day. I would look up Joe Bob on YouTube and like just kind of, because on YouTube you could just find not the films but all of the excerpts from the each one. Yeah. So I would just go Halloween 2, Halloween 3, Ghoulies, and just like listen to him while I'm getting ready for my day. And it was a nice nostalgic trip back to the days when I was babysitting, the days when I was staying up late at home and watching Joe Bob and all that kind of stuff. And I was like thinking, God, I would just love to see Joe Bob return. And I tweeted about it. I was like, I would love nothing more than to see Joe Bob back. Mm. And it was just like one of those dream come trues where, because after I did that, I got a text from someone that was like, hey, just a heads up, you're that might actually become a reality. And I was like, no way. And then I didn't hear about it for months. And then they made the announcement that he was coming back, and I was like, you know, because he serves a purpose, you know, which is kind of falling in line with the great tradition of horror hosts, but doing it with less, a little bit of tongue in cheek, but, you know, in a kind of dad jokey kind of way, along with being incredibly informative. And I was so glad to see him come back with a vengeance, with some great titles, and the Do the Thanksgiving one, which I sat through, and I'm very much looking forward to the Christmas one. So,
well, even better that it was intended just as a one-off.
Mm-hmm. No, I know.
And the fact that now we're getting a full show.
And it broke the internet.
That's the beautiful thing about it.
Really great stuff.
Okay. I will say that Picnic at Hanging Rock almost made my list, and that's one of those things that I still recommend.
As your number one?
No, I was just saying. In general, it almost made my list, so I'm predecessing
that. Peter Weir, great movie, love it.
No. The TV show that is on Amazon Prime, but it was questionably horror. It's totally fucking horror, so I should have put it on. But check out The Picnic at Hanging Rock on Amazon Prime if you have not, the miniseries that they did. But my number one for things I enjoyed of the year was just Discoveries, which is really vague, but I love the fact that as much as we fucking watch, which is a lot, that there is still so much that we're discovering. So some of my top discoveries of this year, Ricky O, I had never seen before. And it was fucking bonkers. And it was just wonderful. Stunt Rock, which is not horror, but still just a blast. Alien Predators, which we watched with Dick while you were dying of the kidney stone. And it was
I totally forgot about that movie. That movie's
you were in pain.
I forgot about Elric's kidney stone.
That was not
a good thing in 2018.
No, we were supposed to be in Phoenix, and instead we were on Elric's couch while he was in like sweatpants dying with a kidney stone watching Alien Predators.
But I know how to wear sweatpants.
Yeah. Hell House LLC, Beyond the Seventh Door. These are all just kind of fucking bad. Things that I was just like, I am so glad that we were able to find this. And so that is my favorite thing.
There's no way I'd want to do this show anymore if there was, or Pearson, anything like this, unless there were still discoveries. That is what keeps you going doing this show.
Exactly.
You
know there's
dude, seriously? Discovery 2018, Doom Asylum, and Blood Hook.
Someone gave me a copy of Doom Asylum to watch told me it's not as good as you have hyped it up to be.
Come back in 2019.
We've told you it's not as good.
So everyone has told me it's not as good as you've hyped it up to
be. Hold my hands, Becca, and let me whisper, do you see?
I do have a copy now, so right. I will be trying to check this out over the break.
I did just get my shipment of all the Vinegar Syndrome ones I ordered right after Joe and the vinegar. Yeah. So I got that Miss Wyzek or whatever the hell it's called, and a couple of Mausoleum. So when we come back, I'll watch all that shit. Yeah. And
I got the Vinegar Syndrome one, and I can't remember the title off the top of my head now, but it's the one that he said was the British Suspiria.
Oh, yeah.
I ordered that one.
Was it Terror?
Terror. So I have that.
I got to watch it.
Yeah, let me know when you guys watch that one. I want to see that. And there's a couple on Amazon Prime, too. So, but anyway, Vinegar Syndrome, there'll be a lot of stuff to listen to in 2019 to catch up on what we're watching.
Always gems. Every year, there's always a Devil's Honey.
There's always a Devil's Honey.
And
that's the tagline of our show. There's always a Devil's Honey.
And make sure you send us your lists. We'd love to hear where we went horribly wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
And especially any that we've missed. Like, there's always a couple that, like, I never see the year that they come out. And then years later, like Hell House LLC, which was, I think, from 2017 or maybe even earlier, where I didn't discover it till this year when it hit Amazon Prime. And that's when everyone else kind of discovered it as well. I remember being at Phoenix and everybody was suddenly like, holy shit, this movie's amazing. And I had heard nothing about it up to that point.
And they made a sequel already.
Yeah, and they made a sequel already that I've heard is good.
Yeah.
So I need to check that out as well.
Where would you have placed Tigers Are Not Afraid if you had decided it fit this year?
Definitely towards the top of my list.
So that's something to look forward to, people. It's a really, really smart movie.
That's another one that I'm kind of like, is it horror?
It is in the same good manners as I think they both are mostly about the drama, but they're in horror. I mean, they're definitely about horror.
I mean, it gets there. Yeah. So
But anyway, it's crazy. To.
Well, look, once again, thank you so much for supporting and listening. By all means, rate and review the show on iTunes. Spread the word. Let's see your top 10 lists this year. I was very happy how diverse. We had some crossover, but we really covered a lot of ground between the four of us. It's been an incredible year. Pleasure doing the show with you guys, and I look forward to 2019. And
thanks to all those listeners who have stuck with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to see which of the four of us come back next year.
Dun, dun, dun.
Cliffhanger.
Oh, gosh.
Fangoria is back. The magazine that set the standard is back as a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition, and they're just about to release their amazing second edition. Set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, fiction, and exclusive artwork. Specific contents are being kept under wraps for now because Fangoria wants you to experience true analog nostalgia when you open that black poly bag and see what's inside for the very first time. But it's not just the magazine anymore. Fangoria is also bringing you novels under its Fangoria Presents label, and Fango is getting into the movie biz. Be sure to check out their latest release, Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich. Head to Fangoria.com and subscribe to Fangoria. A subscription is $60 and will save you about $20 off the cover price. That's Fangoria.com. Subscribe now. Today's episode of Shockwaves is sponsored by Diabolik DVD, featuring demented discs from all over the world. Check them out online at www.diabolikdvd.com. They're the number one source for horror, cult, and strange films from around the world. The company is movie buff owned and operated. If you're looking for rare, unique, and strange films, then you need to head over to Diabolik DVD. They're constantly updating their inventory and have plenty of movies that you won't find anywhere else. They've recently revamped their website, and ordering has never been easier. They now have some of their newest releases include a 4K disc of The Deer Hunter, total masterpiece, new Blu-ray Vinegar Syndrome release of Mausoleum, utterly bonkers, Let the Corpses Tan from Kino, which is incredible, the new Arrow Blu-ray edition of Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and they also have Blu-rays of the RLJ film, All the Creatures Are Stirring, on pre-order. So if you haven't picked up the DVD, save it for the Blu-ray. So for all your horror and occult cinema needs, head on over to www.diabolikdvd.com or find them on Facebook. Also sponsoring our special end of the year episode, we have Shout Factory and Scream Factory. They didn't need no introduction to you guys. Over 425 horror, sci-fi, and cult classic Blu-ray releases over the years. Some of the biggest ones, The Thing, Carrie, Candyman, The Return of the Living Dead, The Fog. But this month, in December, the key release, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, It's Garbage Day. Don't miss it. You also have Carpenter's Starman. From Hammer Films, we have Dracula, Prince of Darkness. Coming up in the new year, we got Collector's Edition of Valentine, Cobra, because he's the disease and you're the cure, 10 to Midnight and The Craft. And And finally, Severin Films, purveyors of the finest quality horror, cult, and exploitation films on special edition Blu-ray. Visit www.severin-films.com and follow Severin Films on Facebook. This year, Severin released red carpet special editions of fan favorites such as Threads, The Changeling, one of the best releases of the year, Eden Alive, Emmanuel, and The Last Cannibals, Horror Party Beach, Anthropophagus, Absurd, The Sadist of Notre Dame, and the sold-out limited box sets The Amicus Collection and The Blood Island Collection. Severin has almost doubled the disc lineup for 2019 with films from Eurocult Fulci Masters, Joe D'Amato, Umberto Lenzi, Bruno Mattei, Franco, and Andy Milligan, Al Adamson, and Hemisphere Horror Box Sets. Keep an eye on Severin Films at our website and on Facebook. They're killing it.